You're listening to DraftKings Network.
Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart, the seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady, live only on Netflix.
You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with The Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
It's only a kick. A jump. A block. It's only a serve. It's only a tackle. A run. It's only for the fans. After all, it's only pressure. You got this. Adidas.
Welcome to the Big Suey. A podcast exclusive.
Risky move.
Just when you thought the show could not be more diluted.
Walk the plank.
Bam.
No more free Disney trips.
Now here's the marching band of nowhere.
Arr, matey.
Fat face.
Dan's been stress eating.
And the habitual liar.
Stugatz can't be trusted.
The Big Suey.
Yo ho, yo ho, a pirate radio life for me.
What a fun and fascinating game last night. And we bring in Amin El-Hassan now because there are a number of things I want to discuss with him. But let's start with, can you allow that play at the rim with that amount of time left on the clock? Game winners are never at the rim like that, Amin.
Yeah, you know, the funny thing was before that play was drawn up, and by the way, as Monty Williams pointed out, that was a play the Suns actually ran years ago when Jay Triano was the head coach. I remember watching that game against Memphis where they did it for Tyson Chandler. But before that play was drawn up, I was thinking about the power of the decoy. And I thought back to a play that the Warriors ran against the Clippers, ironically enough, a couple of years ago, where Steph Curry is coming off a Draymond Green screen and Andre Iguodala is the inbound man who's on the baseline. And the guy guarding Steph, the guy guarding Draymond, and the guy guarding the inbound all jump towards Steph where Steph was. So then Draymond Green just slipped and he goes and Iguodala passes to him. It's a wide open layup. And everyone's like, how could you give that up? How could you give up a layup? You're supposed to protect the basket above everything. And the answer is simple. Steph Curry demanded so much respect and attention wherever he was on the floor that everybody had in their brain, there's no chance we're going to let him beat us. Well, fast forward to last night, I'm thinking the same thing about Devin Booker. And lo and behold, you got Zubac kind of not being as quick to the basket as he was because he
Batum,
had to
stay What was Batum doing?
Batum basically said, Booker's not going to beat us. And what Batum is supposed to do is most teams in that situation, almost all teams, I should say, switch everything. So as soon as there's a screen, we just switch. We just switch. But Batum's saying, I'm not switching because I know that guy. What you should do if you're not a switching team is as the guy comes off, you bump him. You tag him as he's coming along just so he doesn't have like a full head of steam. Batum doesn't do that either because he's worried that split second of him doing this equals Booker going that way and then pop out shot. And what were you doing? The best player on the floor was wide open. So Batum stays hugged up against Booker and indeed almost screens his own man in the process, letting a wide open. Now to Zubac's credit, he recovered in time. He just, you know, he's not as athletic as DeAndre.
He's Zubac. To his credit, he tried really hard, but he's Zubac.
Exactly. And then the third element of this is DeMarcus Cousins. Look at how he's standing. He's guarding the inbound like, I'm not letting this ball get out to the three-point line over here. buddy, they got 0.9 seconds left. You have to shade towards the basket. But again, he's thinking in his mind, Devin Booker's getting this ball. That was a great pass by Crowder. It was a great finish by Ayton. But unsung hero in all this is Devin Booker, because the respect he commanded from the defense is what allowed all that to happen.
I erred in not telling the audience that may not have seen what I'm talking about. With 0.9 of a second left, DeAndre Ayton won the game last night with a dunk after Paul George missed two free throws. Felt so bad for Paul George, but have a lot of questions for you and your expertise, Amin. First of all, the last 90 seconds of that basketball game took damn near 35 real-time minutes because of all the reviews and the replays and getting stuff wrong, even with the technology. What the hell? Like, that can't be. That just can't be.
What did you think got wrong?
Wasn't the ball off of Patrick Beverly?
No, it was. Look, it was the most technical of technicalities. If we had replay 10 years ago, it would have been off of Beverly. But the reality is the technology was so good that we saw Beverly dislodge the ball, but Booker continued to dribble. So there is a point where Beverly's hand is gone. He's touched. It's gone. And Booker still is in contact with the ball. It is the most splitting of hairs out of bounds call, but it is accurate. It was a right call. Now, you can argue that, you know, like Van Gundy did, the spirit of the law is that he's the reason why I went out of bounds. We don't play spirit of the law out here. We play the law. So, I mean, that was a good call.
We played the law in the last 2 minutes. The rest of the game, it's off Beverly. The rest of time, it's off Beverly.
Yeah, because the rest of the game, we don't have the time to sit there for 35 minutes watching people watch TV. And that's the big thing here is I've said this for a while. Look, everyone wants replay. If you get rid of replay, all that's going to happen is the audiences at home are going to see who really touched it last or who really was inside this charge circle, but the refs don't have that to their disposal. We're just going to say, oh, how awful it is. So replay is here to stay. But is there any way we can speed some of this stuff up? That's the question. Can we speed some of this stuff up? And the reality is that call, Beverly, the Beverly call was made by Secaucus. It wasn't made by Scott Foster and his crew. But my thing is this: once there's an inkling before anyone on the court challenges or anything, someone in Secaucus has to start reviewing it so that by the time those guys get to the headset, put their headsets on, screens up, they're like, yeah, it was out of bounds on him. Okay, cool. Thank you. But this thing where they don't start or the start time is delayed or they're taking their sweet time over there, it has to be speeded up. And I think that's something the league should look at.
I hate that a game that ends that way, and I love to celebrate athletic achievement, but I hate that roiling within me is the combination of this. This isn't a real Western Conference Finals. If you're going to give me no Chris Paul and no Kawhi, those are two above average teams that are a little bit broken. And so they're sort of wheezing against each other toward the finish line in a league of attrition. And then it takes 35 goddamn minutes to finish the game. And then when you get the winner, it's still a bunch of people milling about and Boogie Cousins pushing somebody and you're still not sure what the hell happened. And because you're so used to the replay over the last 35 minutes, you're expecting it again now for an interminable amount of time before you actually even know the result or can go to sleep.
Right. And I think the funny thing is nobody seems to react to Devin Booker getting shoved by Boogie Cousins. Like that happened, and not Mike Breen and Jeff Van Gundy and Mark Jackson, not the refs, not anyone, even the Suns, like there's a staffer who kind of jumped in to make sure Devin Booker doesn't get ejected or suspended for the next game. But there really was no, hey, he just shoved him.
He could have beheaded him with a samurai sword, and there was so much going on that nobody would have noticed it.
It was definitely the scene from Anchorman, right? Like Brick could have stabbed somebody with a trident, right? And nothing. Everyone would just be like, "Whoa, that got out of hand."
We gotta go to replay. We'll let the NBA deal with this when it goes. You know, when Boogie's gonna get suspended for that, correct?
Yeah, he's got to. I mean, like it was just such an obvious lack of poise and out of context. Like Booker's smiling, so clearly he's saying something about what's up now, and Cousins lost his cool and he shoved him. I'm like, that's for a guy who's that, you know, 10 years, 11 years in his career to fall for the banana in the tailpipe is kind of ridiculous. The one other thing that I thought was interesting is that you said like, oh, this doesn't feel right because these two teams are shorthanded or whatever. Our buddy Tom Haberstroh has written about this, about champions to have an asterisk, right? Because of injuries or whatever happened. And he said, yes, there absolutely are asterisk champions. And then he proceeded to list every single champion in the history of the NBA, because the reality is every year people are hurt, people are sick, people get suspended, people, whatever happens, and someone who didn't have that stuff happen to them benefits as a result. I still remember 2015 when the Warriors did it. People pointed out, well, I mean, it wasn't just an injury with the Grizzlies series. And then there was someone in the Rockets series who wasn't quite there. And you know, there was something in every single series they played where they weren't quite full strength. And people were like, and of course, the Cavs didn't have Kevin Love and Kyrie Irving. So,
agreed. But what I'm saying is, if I make these the rosters for a full season, those are both 45 win teams we're watching in the Western Conference Finals or less.
Yeah.
Yes, without Chris Paul. With the first two games of that series that I'm watching two teams that are above average basketball teams, but not by much. They're not like Final Four teams without those players involved. And so, whatever. It doesn't matter. Yeah. That game last night was a fun ending and a ridiculous ending. You mentioned the Jay Crowder pass. God, he was so cool and calm about that. And it's because he spent four decades in the playoffs.
That, and also it's the easiest alley-oop pass, which is shoot it. Like most alley-oop passes, you have to place it somewhere not quite above the rim, because if it's directly above the rim, it's goaltending, right? For him, it's just like anywhere in the vicinity of the basket, just throw it up there. And when the guy guarding the inbound, who's specifically there to make it hard because he's 6'10 with long arms, is shading you this way, giving you a direct line of sight towards the basket, it makes it a little easier. And then you're throwing it to a pogo stick who's jumping over like a boulder, basically.
Give me your top five guys in the league that it's easiest to throw a lob to, because I love that the 74-year-old Ayton is one of those guys. I know he's not 74 years old, but in terms of athleticism, like it really is absurd to see someone that size be able to move like that.
All right. In no particular order, I would say Giannis. I would say Anthony Davis. I would say Rudy Gobert, just because the length, I mean, like 7'9", what are you going to do about that? Let's see who else we've got.
Ayton's not going to crack your top five.
Ayton's in there. Ayton's definitely in there. Cause the thing about him is it's not just that he's got good hands and he can jump, but he's really lithe and mobile out there. Right. He's not rumbling to get there. He can,
it's all fast slither. Twitch. It's all fast twitch muscle fiber. All of it.
Yep. And let's see. Let me pick one more. I got five, right? I got to get to five.
Or you could do it like Stu Gatz and just put 12 in there. 12 in your top five. If we can stop at four if you want.
No. I'll throw, you know who I'll throw in there? I'll throw in John Collins. John Collins is pretty good too.
What else did you find interesting about that game last night?
Well, I mean, for all the people who said, oh, see, Paul George quieted the critics. Like, picked a hell of a time to... God. And that's going to be his legacy, Dan, forever. It's one of those things where even after you've kind of like gotten,
those who don't know, Paul George, right before all that, with 8 seconds left, up one, missed two free throws that would have put them up three.
And didn't have a great shooting game overall. He had a couple of buckets in the fourth quarter where it looked like, okay, he could put this thing away, and he didn't play great for most of the game, but he played great when it counted, and bang, game over. And instead, he misses those two free throws. To miss two, missing one would have already kind of had people arching an eyebrow. Missing two was really kind of a death sentence for him. And the reality is this, and not to be, I don't want to be flippant about this, but it's like someone who's a recovering alcoholic, right? Anytime you see them around a bar, I thought, even if you've had 30 years of sobriety, don't get around there. That's what everyone's going to say. And with Paul George, it's the same thing, right? No matter what he does from here on out in his career, anytime there's a misstep towards the end, people are going to remember, and then they're going to hold that against them.
I'm not generally the guy who goes choker, 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 but the free throw line gives you an awful time, awful lot of time to think. And that is one of the places where muscle memory is not helping you. You're up there. If your doubts, if there's doubt in your head, that's a pretty decent place for it to make an appearance.
Yeah. And especially when you, because it gives you the moment to, first of all, obviously the crowd and everything, but also to understand the stakes. If I hit these, the game is over. It'll be really hard for them to do it. Then it's like you missed the first one. Like, damn, well, I've given them a little bit of a window, but still, if I hit this one, it's over. It's for all intents and purposes.
That's a tough night of sleep. Last question before I get you out of here and we bring in David Sampson, because some cool baseball stuff happened last night. I have a simple, complicated question. Cameron Payne, what the hell?
Well, I mean, that's the story that we tell time and time and time again in this league. It's that LeBron, Kevin Durant, Steph Curry, Giannis, James Harden, you put them anywhere, they're going to be great, and their team is going to do reasonably well. And then for the vast majority of everybody else, and that includes stars in there, that includes all stars in that list, it all depends on where I am. Who do I play for? Who do I play with? How do you use me? How am I being coached, right? Everyone is very context dependent. So there are guys who can look like not NBA players, and then put them in the right situation with the right kind of support system, 29 points, 9 assists in a conference finals game. And that's Cameron Payne. And I'll be the first to say, I was one of the guys that I don't think Cameron Payne's an NBA player. I think he's a novelty act. I think he's a guy who dances with Russell Westbrook before games, and he appears to be a very good teammate that everyone likes, but, you know, he's just that guy. And then over the last, literally over the last 8 months or so, because remember, he was in China. He came back to play in the bubble for the Suns, and that's where it kind of came back together for him. And then this year, obviously, playing there, having Chris Paul as a teammate and a mentor and someone talking him through these things, having Monty Williams, who I believe he had played for as an assistant coach in Oklahoma City. There was a relationship there. And then having some amount of success during the regular season with regular minutes and regular appearances, it all got him to this stage right here.
Yes or no question. I'm not going to let you elaborate. You'll elaborate next time. Yes or no question. Kevin Durant is better than Kobe Bryant.
Yes.
We will talk to you again, sir. Always appreciate your expertise. Again, Cinephobe is something you need to be checking out. I'm not sure what it is. What is Cinephobe?
Oh, man, I'm glad you asked. Cinephobe is the podcast where Zach Harper and I review movies that are poorly rated on Rotten Tomatoes and try to ascertain whether they are accurately poorly rated, or perhaps, just perhaps, like Cameron Payne, they didn't get a fair shake. That's Cinephobe, wherever you get podcasts.
I heard my wife wandering around the house the other day talking about John Travolta month. I don't know what's happening there, but I'm very excited about whatever it is going to take place there. John Travolta month. Thank you, Amin. Always appreciate your expertise, sir.
Really quick, I just want to say this week's episode is Nick Fury, Agent of S.H.I.E.L.D. It's a Marvel movie. And everyone says, oh, I didn't know they made one with Samuel Jackson. They didn't. They made one 20 years ago with David Hasselhoff. You won't be disappointed.
Hey everybody, it's Mike, and typically I record these Miller Lite spots in the studio, but I requested that I specifically record this one from my home office because I got a window, and I'm looking outside at those beautiful fishtail palms, knowing that in just a few seconds, I'm going to go out there, I'm going to crack open a can of Miller Lite, because while sitting outside by my fishtail palms is usually a good time, I like to take it up a notch and make it a Miller time. That's right, you crack that puppy open, and you don't have to think about what you're drinking for a darn second. A lot has changed over the years, including my backyard. Lots of landscaping being done right now. But the one thing that hasn't changed is the undebatable quality of Miller Lite. You don't have to choose what quality is the best. Miller Lite has great taste, and it's less filling. Tastes like Miller time. To get Miller Lite delivered right to your door, visit MillerLite.com/Dan, or you can find it pretty much anywhere that sells beer. Celebrate responsibly. Miller Brewing Company, Milwaukee, Wisconsin. 96 calories per 12 ounces, fewer calories and carbs than premium regular beer.
Hey, it's Kaylee Cuoco for Priceline. Ready to go to your happy place for a happy price? Well, why didn't you say so? Just download the Priceline app right now and save up to 60% on hotels. So whether it's Cousin Kevin's Kazoo Concert in Kansas City, go Kevin! Or Becky's Bachelorette Bash in Bermuda, you never have to miss a trip ever again. So download the Priceline app today. Your savings are waiting.
Go to your happy place for a happy price. Go to your happy price, Priceline.
Samson, you've got no use for these Marvel movies, these superhero movies, right? You don't like any of them. Amin's done a whole month of this stuff.
I hadn't seen any of them, and now I've seen them all. So I actually enjoyed each one of them, shockingly. It's just popcorn. It's popcorn for me.
I'm surprised to hear you say that you've gotten sucked into that hole. That's Insomnia Theater?
It's Insomnia Theater and it's FOMO, because it where I was working at CBS Sports HQ, I think was maybe is, I guess, everyone was talking about it in the studio pre-COVID, and I hadn't seen one of them, and I got absolutely shamed. So once the quarantine started, I watched every single one in order, might I add.
Nothing personal is something you need to be checking out. We've told you a number of different times that no executive speaks this plainly, cuts through all of it. I got a message from Dominique Foxworth based on some of the things that you said last week about how much he loves you just because of how you were guffawing at whatever it is. I don't even remember, because every week something happens, but you were just so guffawing at the idea of corporations having moralities, I guess, or teams trying not to cheat, because this is why I bring you in today. I was laughing out loud at how immature all these baseball players are, which is basically just Sergio Romo and Max Scherzer. Okay, you're going to question me? Here's my penis. You guys want to see my penis? I'm going to show you my penis on television. How's that, baseball? Like, it's so immature, all of it. And then Girardi, the Marine, marches out. I expect him to, you know, with a bayonet, like, stab three players. Like, what did you make of everything that was happening last night?
I actually felt badly for my old friend Mike Hill, because his name is associated with this, and it shouldn't be, because it has nothing to do with him. He's sort of the implementer. It's sort of like blaming Whittingham for something that you want to do on the pirate ship that gets screwed up. And this has been a total screw up. And the reason is that it's become part of the collective bargaining negotiations. And that's what the fans don't understand. The reason why Max Scherzer put on the show he put on is not because he doesn't use sticky substances. He does. The reason why he put on the show is he's so angry that the rule is that he can't use anything. And what we should focus on is his quote, where he said, "Hey, I almost hit somebody in the head with a 95er because I couldn't grab the ball. I'm going to my hair. I'm trying to get any sort of sweat I can." And Girardi lost his mind, saying, "Why is he going to his hair so often?" And this is what Girardi did. We didn't like it when he did it with the Marlins. He was a first-year manager. Now he's a bit of a veteran, but he always is trying to gain a little advantage by catching other players doing things. But his house is so very, very glass, and every manager's team is using foreign substances, so they shouldn't be doing what Girardi did, ever.
What are the things from last night? And just to recap for those who haven't seen it, you want to recap the more interesting things from last night? Because Romo, later that night, Romo did the same thing that Scherzer did, which is he's offering the umpire, takes off his belt and is offering, "Here, you want to see my penis too?"
Well, he actually did pull his pants down, but having been in a clubhouse for so many years, I can tell you that not one player has ever gone commando. So when Sergio Romo took his pants down, there was no penis risk whatsoever. So I just want to make sure that everyone's okay with that, because there was not anything that you're describing. That said, what the players are trying to do is they're trying to show up MLB, not the umpires, but it ends up showing up the umpires because they're acting so disrespectfully. Just let yourself get checked. If those are the rules that are going to change eventually, let yourself get checked and move on. But remember who Scherzer's agent is. Do you know who it is? Guess.
Boris, I'm sure.
It's Boris. So what Scott Boras does as an agent, understanding that if this rule is going to be part of the negotiations, which it is, the players do not want to give in even an inch before they sit at the table and try to get something back for allowing substances to be taken away. So he had his players, and he communicates with his players en masse. What that means is he's got a stable of players, whether it's Zach Gallen or Scherzer or Gerrit Cole, and he communicates with them, telling them exactly how to act in certain situations. And then he'll assign different parts, like he's the maestro in a play. "I want you to say this publicly. I want you to act totally pissed off publicly. I want you to throw your hat down in disgust and say that we deserve a seat at the table." So he will write out a play. I don't want to call him Shakespeare. I really don't want to do that, actually. But that's what we saw last night. And it really doesn't make baseball look good at all, does it?
Well, I was trying to think, and I don't want to be prisoner of the moment here, but when Sergio Romo is dropping his pants and throwing his belt at the umpire's feet, I was trying to think off the top of my head, like, when's the last time I saw something that just looked this publicly embarrassing, where everyone's behaving like children and there's a rebellion here that is, you know, it's tantrums, the tantrums in the terrible twos. Like, these are not adult behaviors.
But again, I want you to look at it from a slightly different perspective. They're not doing it to throw tantrums. They're doing it to make a point. And when kids throw tantrums, often they don't know what their point is. And often they don't know what their goal is, other than wanting more dessert maybe and not wanting to go to bed. But what these players are doing, there is no child in it. It is very pointed what they're doing. And again, I want to reiterate, the reason they're doing this is for leverage when it comes to negotiating the new agreement. You should be concerned as a baseball fan, not that they're acting like two-year-olds. You should be concerned that the owners and the players are so far apart in even something as simple as how to check for substances, that when it comes to the real meaty issues, do you like that one? I mean, meaty issues, that we can then get something accomplished. But I'm just afraid that this is going the wrong direction completely.
When's the last time you saw something, just visually, the optics of something, that you were that embarrassed for the sport you care about there?
Does it have to be in? I was very, very embarrassed when Pedro Martinez went after Don Zimmer.
Yeah, that's in the realm. Okay, so Pedro Martinez beating up an old man is in the realm of what it is that we saw last night, where Don Zimmer is rolling around on the floor. You're worried about his hip because he's 85 years old and he's just been thrown to the ground by 164-pound Pedro Martinez.
But I'm not comparing that, because I was embarrassed when that happened for the sport. Last night, I was not embarrassed. I was sad. And so I want to draw that distinction, if you'll let me.
Sad just because negotiating, you don't normally get emotional about these things. Sad?
Yeah, because I'm watching the sport and I'm watching people who are not involved in the game have the reaction that you're having. And the reaction that you're having is that you think it's embarrassing. I understand what's going on behind the scenes. I just wish they would have done it a different way. They would have manifested their distrust and anger in a different way. What happened with Pedro and Don Zimmer is, and that was the first thing that came to my head, that was part of a baseball brawl. I really don't care much over my 18 years. I didn't mind when there were brawls. I didn't mind when players were going after each other. I enjoyed that, actually. One of my great memories is Miguel Olivo charging third base against the Mets, the third baseman, and how much I actually love that. But when coaches are involved, I don't like that. It reminded me a little bit of the Malice in the Palace when fans are involved. It's just so inappropriate that embarrassed me. Last night, I was sad. I'll give you that. I had an emotion of sadness that baseball is heading toward this absolute crisis here in a couple of months.
I'm also guessing that's the Michael Hill you're dying on. There's some emotion there for you because it's your guy in the middle of it who's at the center of the embarrassment, and it's not really his fault.
I thought about that too, and I actually did not contact him last night because I didn't want to be that guy. He's got so many people doing that to him right now. And I understand why Michael Hill took that job, because he didn't get another GM job and baseball wanted him around still. And he's really good at what he does. And he should be a candidate for other GM jobs as they open next season. But he took over for a guy named Chris Young. I don't know if you know that name. He's a former pitcher who was running on-field operations last year. And he then became the assistant GM in Texas. They may have named him GM, but he's really like the assistant GM. So Mike Hill inherits this situation. And now Rob Manfred chooses to use foreign substances as a sword when it comes to the collective bargaining agreement. And there's no choice. Mike Hill was told, you're going to sign this memo. You're going to be a part of enforcing it. And it's just not a great situation for him, because these are all of his, don't forget, all the GMs, all the managers, all the players. He knows them all. They're his, I can't think of the word because it's early, all of his compatriots, all of the people he works with.
If you want more on this, you should. David Sampson, Nothing Personal. Check it out. He'll be with us tomorrow again. Anything else from last night that you think is worth noting, that because it was a lot of stuff happening last night as this comes to a head, what I thought was a pretty silly controversy, what I thought was a cheating scandal I'm numb to, now continues to escalate.
Yeah, I've got several more minutes on this, but to do that, you're going to have to download Nothing Personal today.
Very good. Nothing personal and cinephobe. Anything about the movies you guys care to discuss here? If you want to intermingle here before you leave, I don't know, Samson, if you're also jealous and rage filled that Amin has a movie podcast that is sort of near our sphere, along with Adnan's.
I mean, I've been dying to ask you this because to me, the biggest problem I have is I don't have enough hours in the day. And is this a little niche that you always dreamt of, that you want to watch movies that are poorly rated and see whether or not that that's how it should be? Because do you then not watch all of the great movies that are out there because you're spending so much time watching crap?
Oh, no, it's quite the opposite. So I love watching good movies now, but it's also ruined some good movies for me because they often lean on the same devices that bad movies do. For instance, exposition, overly expository dialogue. I can't unsee it now. It's whenever I see it, I see people, oh, you're not talking. You're just trying to explain to us what's happening. And that sticks out. But the reality is now I have bad movies that I see on my guide that I want to watch. And I say, well, no, probably should wait. For instance, it's a Travolta movie that I wanted to watch. And I said, on second thought, let me hold off for Travolta month. So this is my burden.
I'm fascinated by your choice. I think it's an interesting podcast, but if you want to hear reviews that are in-depth and interesting for shows to watch, I also encourage you to check out The Dinghy, Nothing Personal. We're doing some stuff there. I think today I'm reviewing it. I reviewed Wrath of Man yesterday. Did you check that one out?
Not yet. Which one is Statham?
And in a way that I found unfortunate because it erases all the Guy Ritchie and focuses on way too much Statham.
So, see, Amin, I'm not sure what your position is on the ship because that's the review, right? Statham being Statham. And I watched it because it's a Guy Ritchie movie. I like Jason Statham just fine. But where was Guy Ritchie? He totally sold out. So what I tried to discern is how much money he got paid during the pandemic to do Wrath of Man or a pre-pandemic, because there was no Guy Ritchie to be found. It was formulaic. I was interested in it. I thought it was fine. Seeing Josh Hartnett made me smile. But other than that, I did not find it to be a movie that was worthy. And I don't even look at Rotten Tomatoes because I don't read reviews before I watch a movie because I think it ruins it. And I don't want to hear what other people have to say. So I actually don't even know how that was reviewed. So I don't know if you'll get a chance to see it.
Yeah. So we actually don't read the reviews until after we've seen the movie, but we do know the overall score. And for Wrath of Man, the Rotten Tomatoes score is actually pretty positive. 66% from the critics. And let's see what the audience has it as.
I was so bummed. I just saw the preview and I could tell, wait a minute, one of the 10 directors for whom I will stop and watch a movie has been erased by this particular actor, this particular genre of actor. It bothered me.
You got that from just the trailer, Dan?
Yes.
So you haven't seen it?
I haven't. No, I saw the trailer and I was like, wait a minute, there's no Guy Ritchie in here. Like, I mean, the trailer was long enough to deduce that. Yes, I didn't need the actual movie. The trailer was enough to say, I am not watching this. There's no Guy Ritchie in it.
It's a total nightmare for a studio, what you just said, that you judged your entire view of a movie off the trailer and you ended up being right, which is going to inform your behavior going forward.
Not only that, on a director that I will stop for, a director that has made, like, there are like 10 of those. There aren't very many that I will watch everything that he makes. And this was one that I was like, no, I'm drawing the line here. I'm not doing this for Statham.
That's a nightmare. It's so bad what you're saying because...
No, but anyway. I'm not the audience for that movie anyway.
Hey, the audience score on Rotten Tomatoes, 90%. Trust me, the studio's fine. They're sleeping good at night.
There's a reason that they do that. There's a reason that Guy Ritchie sells his soul because the Statham will continue to get these. I'm also bothered by the fact that every goddamn action star in America is over 50 years old. Like, it's stupid.
Are you just going to leave it there? What's wrong with being over 50 and an action star? Is that too old?
I mean, come on. Liam Neeson running around there? What, 10 years from now, we're going to have Taken with a walker and a dialysis machine? Come on, knock it off.
Dan, America has daddy issues. That's all that is.
You guys are unbelievable. Liam Neeson will continue to get watched and paid for and viewers to pay their money because they like seeing him in that role because he can still do it. Were he to be in a walker, it wouldn't work anymore.
Little tennis balls at the end of the walker. He's going to kill people with the little tennis balls at the end of the walker. Again, Cinephobe with Amin Alhassan, John Travolta month is coming up. Valerie Lebitard, very excited about that. Also, David Sampson's Nothing Personal. You can get a lot of unfiltered, the good stuff, the sweet stuff over there. Thank you, guys. Appreciate, as always, the expertise. Excellent. Guys, thank you for making yourself available. You made it very easy for us to have a show today.
Hey, everybody, it's Mike, and typically I record these Miller Lite spots in the studio, but I requested that I specifically record this one from my home office because I got a window, and I'm looking outside at those beautiful fishtail palms, knowing that in just a few seconds, I'm going to go out there, I'm going to crack open a can of Miller Lite, because while sitting outside by my fishtail palms is usually a good time, I like to take it up a notch and make it a Miller time. That's right, you crack that puppy open, and you don't have to think about what you're drinking for a darn second. A lot has changed over the years, including my backyard. Lots of landscaping being done right now. But the one thing that hasn't changed is the undebatable quality of Miller Lite. You don't have to choose what quality is the best. Miller Lite has great taste, and it's less filling. Tastes like Miller time. To get Miller Lite delivered right to your door, visit MillerLite.com/Dan, or you can find it pretty much anywhere that sells beer. Celebrate responsibly. Miller Brewing Company, Milwaukee, Wisconsin. 96 calories per 12 ounces, fewer calories and carbs than premium regular beer.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.